Pick up your mic and let's go.
Why are you so bossy today, dude?
I have a game tomorrow. One of the two of us has to work on this Saturday.
Yeah, well, I actually have to work on this Saturday as well. I've got another podcast that I do. Two guests.
You have to cut and Kate, you have to cut Kate's lawn.
Yeah, for some coins. And now, look, I've canceled. I canceled my estate plate, my estate planning meeting for this show today. So
I feel like this
it better be good.
This is kind of a reaction. Is this a reaction to the show not being picked up? Now you're gonna plan your estate?
No, I haven't. I did my will like 9 million years ago before my third kid. She's not in it. You know, apparently I think I've left my children with one of my best friends and he doesn't even know it. You know?
It's so funny to go back over that stuff. It's like, what was I thinking?
No, I know. It's been, I mean, I think, 10 years maybe. And I'm like, I got to look at this thing. I don't even know what, I don't know who my kids are going to if I die. I don't know what's happening. I honestly think they're going to my friend Jesse. And really? He doesn't even know it yet. I mean, if Aaron and I go down, he's just get my kid's just going to show up on his doorstep.
They can come here. Yeah.
So I got to figure it out. I got
to. Why do you not react to that? Can you not hear me? They can come here.
Yeah, I don't want to touch that. I don't like that.
Why?
Because they'll be all uptight and you know they'll grow up with. You know, really, really hyper conservative values, and
yeah, parents who love them. Parents, yeah, they who won't. Are, parents they, who are aware at night.
They won't be. They won't be pro-choice.
Is that you? That's how you got me pegged. Do you know Michelle at all? Have you ever met her?
No, I do. Look, you already have enough children. You don't need mine.
But by that point, I mean, we're talking, your oldest is 13. Unless this happens this week, I can handle, let's say, a 16, a 12, and a 10-year-old. That's easy.
Where are the boys going if you and Michelle croak?
To my sister, I believe. But,
okay. You think? You're not sure?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't think. I don't know. To my ex-wife.
Jesus, that would be amazing. She's like, wait a minute.
Right. Wait, who are these boys? Who are? Oh, those are Joe's kids. Yeah.
No, it's a weird thing, though, man, to plan that stuff. You know? It's strange.
Do you have the first to die policy? So if you go down, everything funnels into Aaron's bucket, yeah. And then after Aaron goes, it goes down to the kids?
I think, you know, I think so. I that's why I have to get back into it.
I've Is your house lazy. In your name or the house in your and Aaron's names?
It's in both of ours.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you, maybe I can just skip the call. I bet. Are you planning my estate right now? Is this what's happening?
Who's getting your tennis shoes?
Ooh. I haven't figured that one out, but I got to write that in.
Think of the inheritance tax on that.
Wow. I know. That's true. I got to go through every item.
You better hope that your boys grow up with small hoof feet like you have. They won't fit. They can give them to their kids someday when they're seven.
Are you, have you left anything for me in your will?
Just the pictures.
Just okay, I'll take that. Well, you know what
like
I'm going to do?
I've had those over your head for so long. I feel like if and when I die before you, because I'm so uptight, I will send you the negatives and all the photos that I have on you.
Oh, I would welcome those to come out. At this point, anything that's going to give me some kind of press and maybe lead to work, I'll take it. So release them now. I don't even care.
Here's a funny thing. Photos. People don't know sometimes when you and I are kidding. I don't have any photos on you. But if anybody's heard this podcast at all, they know that there's nothing really that I could hold over your head. You would, as you just said, you would welcome putting anything out there to the world to view. So I remember when we were talking about your mom and trying to get her as a guest, I said to you, you have to talk to your mom's people in order to contact her. And then your people talk to your mom's people, and then they ask if you can talk. And I had two friends of mine that texted me and said, wow, that is so sad that Oliver has to talk to.
Oh, my God. His
mom. I was like, I was kidding. We were kidding. That's why, well, Twitter doesn't work sometimes. That's why social media, that's why Happy Abandonment Day didn't work for you, because it's sarcasm, but a lot of the world doesn't either get sarcasm or...
That's okay, though. It's like there's those few people who think that, and it's like, okay, whatever, you know, for the most part.
Hey, guys.
You're the first guest to ever show up ahead of time.
You're early, man. This is good.
How are you? I'm Jax, by the way.
Hi, Jax. I'm Joe. That's Oliver.
Hey, Oliver. What's up, you doing, dude? Guys? Let me grab my cup of coffee real quick.
Yeah.
Go.
I'm in my man cave or garage.
No.
It's
like a NASCAR pit right there.
Well, it's, yeah, I mean, I got everything in here.
Oh, God. Sweet.
Corvette.
Wow, look at that.
I got all kinds. We'll get into it. I'll be right back.
Okay.
All right.
I need my coffee or it's
yeah,
not
going
to
no,
happen.
Hey.
No, go. I got to pee.
Okay,
wow, cool. I love that he's early. That's great, man.
It's a good
sign. I haven't been early for anything
in my
entire life.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that.
Just finishing up on this Will thing, though, you know, I do have a call to, you know, replan my estate. I am going to leave you something, okay? I don't know what it is yet, but I swear to God, I'm actually going to leave you something in there. I got to figure it out, and then I will reveal what that is.
I'm just
going
to tell you right now, I won't take them.
Well, I don't care. You have to. Are you crazy?
No, it's going to be some, like, drug thing or something that I have to take at your funeral. Can I speak? If this happens, if this comes to pass, can I now mark myself down as one of the speakers at your service?
An eulogist?
Yeah. Can I
do that? Is that the way it's called, like a eulogist, I guess, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can eulogize me.
Or I'll just MC. And now for some more real touching words about Oliver, here's his sister, Kate. Let's bring up his mom. Goldie, come on up.
Oh, gosh. This is kind of morbid.
Rio wants to talk about her dad. Come on, kid. Get up here. Quit your crying.
Oh, Christ. Well, I'm leaving you something.
Okay, I accept. I'm telling you, if it's some sort of weird drug thing, I'm not going to take it. Put it in a frame.
First of all, you have this idea after all these years that I'm like a druggie. I like smoking my marijuana, and then maybe a little like chocolate mushrooms here and there. I'm not doing ketamine or any sort of crack.
You got a guy in a dad hat who just lit something up.
I'm a new dad. I got, you know, like I'm getting up early. I'm up at like 5 or 6. I get up at 5 or 6 every day because I go to bed kind of early. So I get up at 5 or 6, but I need that first cup of coffee and just a couple hits of a joint in the morning just to make my day. You know, the coffee and the weed, they kind of like level me out.
Yeah, no, I get it. Joe's like, a joint? Oh, yeah, how dare you demon.
I don't drink alcohol anymore. I don't do anything else. All I do is my occasional joint before I go to bed and once in the morning. You know, I can get into why. I started about 3 years ago, to be honest. When my father passed away, I needed something because it was just, it was brutal. And
did the weed actually help with that?
Oh, my God. Yes. It not only helped with my anxiety, it helped with my marriage. It helped with my friends. I mean, I'm just a calmer person. I don't let things bother me. I have a very short fuse, very, very short fuse, like my father. And the weed, I probably wouldn't be with my wife right now if it wasn't for weed, to be honest.
Really?
CBD stuff.
Elaborate on that a little bit, because I mean, if you've listened to the show or I mean, if you even haven't, I love my weed. You know, I have for a long time. I think it's a beautiful medicine, right? So
I do too.
What did it do for you?
Oh, God, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I would love to be a support, a big endorsement ad for Weed. I have a hard time retaining information. Like, I'm the kind of person that reads a book and I can read the same page five times and I have no idea what I read. So it's tough for me. So the Weed helps. I get a good night's sleep with the edibles at night. I don't take edibles during the day because I've done that. When I go into a corner and suck my thumb.
So I feel like the few times the edible thing, it's like shishito peppers to me. You eat five of them, nothing. And then when you get to number six,
you're chasing
all of a sudden you're talking to Jesus and Buddha in the same room, and you just don't know when, what, how, or why with the edible thing. And I don't know. It's too much of a roulette wheel for me.
Well, you know what?
It's all dosed out.
In my heyday, when I, you know, my Hollywood fun days, I would take that kind of stuff during the day. Like I would just, but now being a father, I need my sleep. So I take it before bed and I don't wake up until 6 a.m. And when I wake up at 6, I'm like gung ho, ready to go. Like no grogginess. No, I'm just like, I wake up like this and I'm like, all right, let's go.
Did you stop drinking?
Yeah. I stopped drinking just because not because I dislike alcohol, just my body just won't accept it anymore. For some reason, if I have I drink vodka straight, and I've been drinking that for 20 years. And then one day, like about a year ago, I, you know, went out for a drink and I just couldn't, I had a sip and I got sick. And I was like, maybe I'm not feeling good. Went out a couple nights later, had another one, got sick again. So I had to give up alcohol. I guess my body just said, you know what? No more. So it's a bummer because I like to drink, but I just can't do it. So that's why I smoke.
I feel like we're in the lobby and the doors are about to swing open to some self-help or AA meeting as everybody walks in, as you guys are comparing notes. But I wanted to ask both of you, because I sit here in the heart of the Midwest. Jax, you're from Michigan.
I am. Moist from Kentucky.
Are we in a place now, are you guys in LA at a place now where you can talk maybe more freely about Weed and I, just being in the Midwest, I don't get it. Like, it's not that big of a deal to talk about it, and maybe that makes its way slowly across the country. Maybe I just live in my conservative nest, and I know Oliver will hammer me on that. Or are we at a point where it's not that big of a deal to talk about?
Listen, work for Fox.
It depends on obviously where you live. Obviously, California is a very liberal place, a very free spirited. You know, everybody's going to have their pros and cons about it. It's fairly new. It's this generation's gold rush right now. People are not sure how to handle it. Banks don't know how to handle it. It's not federally legal, but it's legal. And it's really shady. There's a very gray area. People are investing in it because we're not sure if it's going to grow. It's just a really weird thing right now. And we're in a time, I think, where, you know, people are scared of it. But they're saying, oh, I'm not going to do it, but they're kind of want to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, they're just, it's really scary. And for me, being in the entertainment industry, I have to be careful, you know, on, you know, how I use it and whatever. I mean, then you can say, well, how come Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg are on it? And they're crushing it. Yeah, they are. But you just got to be very careful on how
I see. I think weed is just not taboo anymore at all. I mean, I can talk about it. Everyone can talk about it. People smoke it. You know, Chelsea, Snoop, Martha Stewart, everyone. I mean, it's like having a cocktail now. You know what I mean? I think that stigma has gone away. You know, maybe not. Maybe in the Midwest, Joe. I mean, do you still feel that even where you are?
I do. I think a lot of people. Because when we talked about this with regard to Michelle not being able to sleep, I had people coming out of the woodwork in St. Louis, in this little community I live in, offering us edibles for sleep and saying, oh, you'd be shocked at how many people in your inner circle are taking edibles, smoking weed, doing whatever. I just had no idea. And yeah, that too. I think it's all around me. I just think where I live, we don't really talk about it like the two of you guys are talking about it. I don't think it's a big deal. I'm not judging you, Jax and Oliver.
You know what I'm saying? It's healthy. It fights cancer. You know, I mean, they give it to cancer patients. It kills cancer cells. It makes me happy. It's making my life better. So, you know, if it improves your life, I don't really see a problem with it. you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and it slowly makes its legalized way across the country. But you're right. My brother-in-law is a part owner of a dispensary in Denver, like the Mesopotamia, the cradle of civilization for legalized weed. And it's still kind of weird to talk about, even in Denver. And as you said, federally, it's one set of rules. Locally, it's another set of rules. And so you get banks and
Denver's a different breeding ground. They laugh at weed. They're on mushrooms now and ecstasy. Mm-hmm. They're trying to legalize everything over there. They're a different breed of people.
Well, they decriminalized psilocybin in Denver.
Yeah, and to me, that's pushing it. To me.
Jax, how do you feel as you look back and now that you've made the announcement, you and Brittany, you're not going to be on the show anymore, the Vanderpump Rules. That's why I asked. I feel like that's got to be a relief.
It's a huge, huge relief for me. When we, you know, talked it with the producers and stuff, it just didn't make sense for me anymore, to be totally honest. I mean, they just said, listen, you know, if you're not really going to partake in any of this stuff, and I was battling them the last 2 years because I didn't want to shoot things. It just doesn't make sense for a 40-year-old to be hanging out with a 20-year-old and fighting and arguing. And like, I have nothing in common. It was getting stretched and it just didn't make sense anymore. And I have zero interest in Hollywood lifestyle. I'm 40. I'm going to be a father. My focus is on that. It's just not fair to the show either to be like, okay, I'm going to sign up for this, but I'm only going to be able to do these, this, and this. So, you know, I was okay with the decision, you know, to hang it up.
Because they want you to be you, right?
Yeah,
or what we've seen on the show. So that
right.
means you've got to be the shit stirrer. You've got to be the guy that's getting into all these controversies. And eventually, I don't care who you are. That has got to be so tiring, whether it's real or fake or whatever it is. It's got to be so tiring.
You have no idea. Not only do you have to film it, but then you got to rewatch it again 6 months later. So, like, you know, God knows how they edit the show or whatever, and they're going to make you look how they want to make you. Doesn't matter.
Of course.
And, you know, what frustrates me is people will be like, oh, Jax, you're crazy. You're off hinge. You're this. Well, yeah, you got to understand. We're filming hours and hours and hours of footage, right? So the TV show is only 45 minutes long. You got commercials in there. They're only showing when I'm at my peak. They never show how I got there or how I resolve the situation. They just show me going, rah! Well, yeah, I do look like crazy when you're only showing little clips of me. You didn't show me how I got there. If people would understand why I was mad, they would be like, oh, okay. Well, now we understand why he's acting like a crazy person. They never mm-hmm. show that. You know, and it just wasn't fair to me. Like I said, it's not fair to my son who's coming into this world. He didn't ask for this. So, like I said, we're not walking away from TV. We're just going to move on to something more family oriented, something that's just less stress, no drama. We don't have time for any of that anymore. And nothing against the show. Still going to be a fan. It's going to be nice to be able to watch it and tap in and tap out. But I just, you know, fake arguing
signed,
and all that.
Have you signed NDAs? Like, can you talk about behind the curtain? I mean, or do you have to like keep quiet still about how it all works?
Kind of keep a little bit quiet. I mean, I can talk about certain things, but I just, you know, I don't want to, the show was good to me. I feel like, you know, they did
no,
me a
I mean,
little,
it's, yeah, exactly. It's
they just, did me a know, little dirty towards the end, but that's part right. of the business. That's, yeah. There's nothing you can do. I was paid a lot of money to be that douchebag, that villain, that guy, you know? Mm-hmm. So of course I amped it up. It was part of my job. And you mm-hmm. know,
so you know, like, you know what you're doing, right? I mean,
yeah.
essentially, yes, it is an unscripted show. We are looking at reality, but everyone has their role to play, and it's
right.
a heightened version
yes.
of that person. I mean, is that sort of how it is? It's like, okay,
exactly.
Jax, you're this dude, fucking ramp it up.
Yes.
And you're this girl, and you're this guy, bring it up,
yep.
right? I mean, is that you're creating conflict,
right?
As
because
well.
Honestly, who's gonna sit and watch me and you sit and braid each other's hair? No one's going to watch
yeah.
that. I got to right. keep my job,
I
right? I got expenses. I like things. So I got to do what I got to do to make the show interesting. And, you mm-hmm. know, I think I did a damn good job of it. You know, I was on the show for 9 years. That's a long time. I made a lot of money and mm-hmm. I was happy. But like I said, like sometimes, you know, the only thing I'm going to miss about it really is the paycheck. I just that lifestyle when you hit a certain age. It's just I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they could double my salary I'd probably go back, but they could double it. But but I mean, what I'm saying is they could offer me a lot more, and I would just be like, listen, I can't do this, guys. I just can't. I can't be a father. And it's not realistic. It's not fair for the viewers. I haven't realistically worked at CERN in like 6 years. So it's like, if I'm still 40 years old bartending and having conversations, trying to pay my rent, and I'm not lying to the people anymore and trying to, no, this is real and this is not real. It's just like, it got too confusing.
Are you trying to play in the space still though? I mean, are you thinking about doing something new, maybe a different kind of reality show or unscripted show?
Yeah. I mean, like, my wife's about to give birth here in about 2 weeks. So, you know, it's
so is Andy Cohen delivering your child?
No, he's nowhere, not allowed near my house. no, I'm just kidding. He's a good guy, but you know,
But this is opportunity to shift for you.
Yeah, this is a shift. I'm reaching out to different networks. Obviously, I'm a big HGTV guy. You know, I love, you know, fixing things up. I'm a guy's guy. I'm really into obviously vintage nostalgic stuff, fixing up things. I don't know. There's some things going on that we're talking about. I can't really talk about. Actually, I have a meeting after with you guys with the network. My wife and I do. So we're lucky enough that people are reaching out to us now, which is nice. So we have the option. It's not like, oh my God, what are we going to do? It's nice that we have a little bit of a cushion and we have the option.
Mm-hmm.
You're making Oliver jealous.
That would be nice.
I said you're making Oliver jealous.
Why am I jealous, Joe?
I mean, I need to work. I mean,
he wants, I know. Well, you know, everybody wants a show, right?
He's referring to the fact that my sitcom didn't get picked up. He's fucking. You're sticking the knife in, right, Joe?
No, I'm not.
But that's
I'm
part
not
of the game.
At all.
I mean, like, you know, it sucks, you know, and when you this world's not gonna, this kind of job is not gonna last forever. So you gotta know, man, you know, okay, you signed on for another year. It's not a longevity. There's no, you know, but you just gotta have to go with it. But we knew that walking into this business. We knew that.
No, but it's great because now you have an opportunity if you are doing something new to pivot, right? I got the title. It's called Gentle Jacks. That's the new title for the show.
I thought I actually thought I wanted to change from shots to tots.
Right. Shots to tots. I like it.
I thought it was cute. But
came first back then? Was it the job, or do they recruit you as? What came first back when you started at CERN? Was it the job at CERN, or was it, hey, we've got a show, you're going to be a bartender at CERN? You know what I mean? Like, what?
Well, the shit that actually was how it happened was I came to California. I was doing the modeling thing and doing commercials. And then I turned 30 and I literally was going to pack up and move back home to Michigan or Florida. It ran its course. I came to California to have some fun, do some modeling and acting. I turned 30. I promised my dad, like, you know, listen, it's time. At a certain point, I would hang it up and come back home and get a real job. My dad's a super conservative, you know, and he just everything's by the book with him, which I love that about him. But, you know, so there was about a 6 month in between where I was not doing the acting, the modeling, anything anymore, but I haven't moved yet. It was kind of the in between. And my girlfriend Stassi at the time was working at CERN, and I had some bartending experience. She's like, why don't you pick up a couple shifts on the weekends to make some extra money until you're ready to go, you know, move on. And okay. So I was like, okay. So I joined them. I worked at CERN for about a month, and my friends all worked there. We all worked together. We're a family. The show was not casted. There was no script in the beginning. We were just a bunch of friends that had a lot of drama. And, you know, Lisa pitched the show. I was literally, the funny thing about this is I had my car. When she pitched the show the week I came in for the pitch to the network, I had my car packed up, ready to move to Florida. Like I was out of here. And then, you know, I come in for the pitch and I'm just to the producers. I'm like, guys, my car's packed. I'm driving back to Florida. So I'm just, you know, I've been shut down a lot in this town. So I'm just assuming I'm not getting this. So if I do, give me a call. Right. They call me the next day. Jax, don't go anywhere. We got the show. And I was like, okay. So I got to unpack my car, I guess. That's how it happened.
Wow. Funny how that shit happens, right? You kind of let go and things come to you, you know? It's interesting. It's interesting.
If you like conversations with incredibly interesting reality TV stars like today's episode with Jax Taylor, go check out the Daddy Issues archives and listen to our conversation with the king of reality TV, Mr. Andy Cohen, where we discuss everything from dad life to surrogacy to parenting during a quarantine, Andy's coming out story, and so much more.
When I came out, I wrote a letter to a friend and I left it out in the den, and it had everything in it. And my mom thinks I left it there on purpose so she would find it. And she found it, and then she came in my room and said, "You have something to tell me?" And I said, "I think you already know." And she said, "I want you to say the words to me. Like, you have to say it." So I said it, and I start crying, and she's crying. And she said, "You know, I probably would have hated your wife anyway."
What a great line. I mean, that says everything about your mom right there in one sentence. That's how... I know. That's your mom.
I know. Right? And you know what? She probably would have hated my wife.
Right,
my
yeah.
She probably would have hated her, too.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more from today's guest, Jax Taylor. Well, let's talk about your dad for a sec, man. I know that relationship was extremely important and powerful to you. And, you know, just pontificate on him a little bit. Expand, like, what kind of a man was he? You know, how are you a part of him? You know?
I think I am my father. You know, my father was just a very, you know, I grew up in the 80s, you know, in the Midwest values where you grew up in a neighborhood, you know, everybody had their garage door open and everybody knew everybody's name. Nobody locked their doors. You know, my dad was my coach in hockey. He was the block captain of the neighborhood. Everybody loved my dad. He was a handsome guy, handyman. Never took a day off. He worked at General Motors. Then he went to the car dealership. So he sold cars. I mean, he was just amazing at his job. Everybody loved him. Just so charismatic, so caring. Didn't say much. He was one of those guys who didn't talk much, but when he did, you listened. He was very quiet. He got that from my sister because I got the talkative from my mother. But other than
was he affectionate?
Yeah, I guess he was affectionate. I guess he was for a guy to a son. My sister was a daddy's girl. I mean, I just had a really good father. I mean, he was like, you know, Tim Allen. He was Tim Allen. Just picture that kind of demographic is kind of like how I grew up. I had a great childhood. Never went without, you know, I didn't know how hard my father worked until I got older, until I realized like, holy hell, he really did work hard, you know? But he was just an amazing man. And I get choked up because I miss him so much, especially right now with my son. I have a son coming into the world and, you know, I think about him every day.
You know, I was just talking about this topic with a friend of mine whose dad just passed away. And I said, this friend of mine was really close with his father. And I said, you know, how lucky are you that you can look at your relationship? And I don't feel like you have a lot of regrets. I know it's hard. It's hard that he's gone, but you didn't waste time when he was here. And I wonder for you, you know, do you look back and you think there were things left unsaid? Do you look back and are you aware of how proud of you he was and vice versa? I mean, was that stuff out on the table?
You know, I was constantly having to prove to my dad because my dad was not okay with me coming out to California. He doesn't agree with this lifestyle at all. But he understands that, you know, college wasn't for me and I needed to go out and explore the world on my own. But I was actually on my way home to Florida. It was Christmas. 2 days before Christmas. And I was actually calling my dad. I'm like, "I'm on my way home." He was sick. "I'll see you tomorrow." He's like, "Okay, I'll see you tomorrow." I hung up and I got a call a couple hours later that he died.
No.
So that was awful. I was actually, on my way. And we were in the car, my wife and I, with my in-laws behind me. We were on our way to the castle where we got married I was secretly going to book the castle, you know, for our wedding. And actually pulling into the castle, you know, the phone came over the speaker. My wife, I didn't think anything. It just said "mom" and I hit it and my mom's bawling and she's like, "Your dad's dead. Your father's dead." And I'm like, "Oh my God." I stopped the car. I panicked. I got off on the freeway. Like I was just about to get off on the freeway. I pulled over. It was freezing outside. I just remember I threw my phone and I just collapsed. And my wife and my in-laws are, "What's going on?" It was a mess, man. Oh. It was a mess. It was hard.
God. But it was sudden, but not sudden, meaning he was sick, but then it happened quickly. Is that sort of?
Yeah, he had stage 4 esophageal cancer. But I don't think, I look back now, though, I'm glad he's not around for all this that's going on in the world. The pandemic and the world changing like this, I don't think it would have agreed with him. So I'm glad he's happy where he is.
And yet you're about to welcome this boy into the world, and that's the part that's just gotta eat you alive.
Yeah, that's the part. You know, I got my son coming in the world, and like all I can think about is like, man, what would my dad think? You know, and you know, my dad didn't see my wedding, he didn't see me propose, he didn't see any of this. So it all happened so quick. You know, he didn't see me buy my first home. You know, I was always living in an apartment. It was just the little things like that. When I, you know, my pride and joy is when I bought my dad the 73 Corvette. Like that was like, you know, it's the one thing when I started making money, the first thing
I
wanted.
Like Hollywood then though? Was he like, hey man, love that you're out there, buddy. You're crushing it. Thanks for the Corvette.
Yeah. He's like, wait, you're not asking me for money anymore? Now you guys send me, all right, stay out there.
But was there a shift though? Meaning like, he's like, dude, I don't agree with what you're doing, but after you actually proved yourself and you're making money, you're supporting your life, you know, and you're able to do your own stuff. Was he more accepting?
I mean, yeah, he's a dad. Like dads are always going to have that. Well, I mean, it looks good on paper, but I don't know. My dad was just very like, you know, if it's too good to be true, it usually is. That's my dad's motto. You know, he's always make good choices. He wrote that, everything he said, always make good choices. I got the tattoo of my dad. And so if he saw me not working hard, he's like, you're making all this money and all you're doing is this. That doesn't sound right. You know? You know, he's like, I don't understand it. How are you making more money than all your cousins and nephews who went to Michigan and got engineering degrees and doctor degrees? I go, Dad, that was never me. And he's like, I'm just shocked. He's like, I'm shocked. He's like, you somehow cheated the system. That's what he used to say.
Right. Oh, God.
Well, I wonder, though, as you now, you know, here you are with a totally different lifestyle than your dad showed you as your father. And now here you are about to become a dad for real. What is your biggest fear? If you weren't on edibles, what keeps you up at night? what is it that worries you most about? Now, I'm 12 years older than you. I've got 3-year-old twin boys. I've got older daughters that are 24 and 21. It's a much different experience raising kids now than it was 20 years ago. And now, as you talked about, I mean, this world is very different, and it feels like it's a lot more frightening than when in the 80s or, you know, when we were all kind of growing up. What is it that keeps you up at night with bringing a person into this world?
Social media.
God, I could not agree with you more.
Social media. Like I said, he's coming into this world. He didn't sign up for this. He didn't sign up for, you know, and people are already coming at us and saying that. I mean, it's just the way the world is. You just kind of have to let it go. But, you know, I'm going to be like, I'm turning into my dad. Now I understand why my dad was like how he was. I get it now. I understand. And yeah, I'm going to be such a protective dad, but the social media aspect and the bullying and I see people taking their lives. It is a real thing. I'm 40 years old. I don't really let much bother me. I have thick skin. I've been on a show for 9 years getting pelted left and right, but stuff does still bother you. You know, you can have 1,000 great comments and have 2 negative ones, and those 2 negative ones will drive me nuts.
Yeah, of course. No, but you have such a unique view of it, I think, because social media, part of the frustration is there's such a fakeness to it. And when you go on Instagram and everybody's filtering their pictures and everybody's presenting this life that is not real and not attainable. And now here you are as a quote unquote reality TV star where, yeah, you're living your life, but you've got producers and they're trying to create conflict. But this is reality TV. You have kind of the next level look at that, where now you run into people on the street that think they know you and they think they have you in a box, put it, well, there's the hothead guy on Vanderpump Rules. And that's not who you are. And now you add that to social media and then the nastiness that exists out there, that I don't know what's going to turn the tide on that, but I feel like at some point it's got to swing back the other way.
It's brutal. It's brutal. I mean, I go on social media and you read that, I mean, big celebrities, A-list celebrities, you know, go through it and, you know, and you think, gosh, nothing could possibly bother them, but it does. It does. It's like, I'm scared of it. I'm petrified. I don't know when I'm going to give my kid social media. I don't know when he's going to get an iPad. I don't know how I'm going to protect him from all these people, because let's be honest, I was a pretty crazy, rambunctious, wild guy. So he's probably going to take heat from my past. So that's a huge reason why I'm so happy not to be part of Vanderpump Rules anymore, because I want to set that aside and do something that I'm happy about, that I'm proud of, that I can make my son proud of me, stuff like that, you know? So I just want to make sure that he knows that when I did this show, you know, I was being paid a lot of money and it was my job to stir the pot. It was my job to cause trouble.
Would you say that you're misunderstood just in general?
I think so. You know, I don't think my wife would have married me. I don't think my friends would be my friends. I don't think anybody would talk to me if I was truly that person that you saw on TV.
Do you give a shit, though? Do you give a shit that people have that perception of you? Or do you want to sort of, you know, clear your name in a way? Or do you care?
I do care, because I think, you know, I would never blame, you know, the editing or the producing. But I just feel like there were some instances that were, you know, I was showed on TV and that really wasn't the real me, or they, mm-hmm. you know, they needed me to look a certain way and they figured out how to do it. And, you know, and it was just a bummer because my wife and I looked like that's not how it happened. So, yeah. So I think so, you know, and more for my son, I think. I just want to make sure that he knows that his dad was just doing his job.
You know? Yeah, dude, I hear your concerns with that. You know, I think that I have three kids, 13, 11 and 7. You know, they're going to know you for you. They're going to see whatever you do and understand that this is what you needed to do to make your money. This is not who you are. He's going to feel that, man. Like, he's just going to know your love, know that you're dad. And when he watches that shit, say, yeah, daddy was out there, you know, making some cash. I mean,
you know,
and as far as social media goes, you know, I think that, Joe, you said, will it ever be reversed, or will we have some sort of a respite from what's happening? I don't think so, personally, because we are just in an evolution. We're all constantly evolving. Social media is going to be here forever. It's just about dealing with it now and sort of understanding, communicating with your kids that, hey, this is the new norm. And there's a lot of fucked up shit on social media, and I'm going to expose it to you right now so you're not shocked by it when it's all of a sudden in your face. I mean, that's sort of how I am with my kids. I'm like, well, you can have Instagram, you can have TikTok, but just understand that this is a non-reality, okay? People are presenting themselves in a way that is almost fictional.
Yes.
And enjoy it as entertainment, but don't emulate this, because this is not real.
Can I ask you a question? Can I cut you off and ask you a question? Because I'm when do you think the right time or the right age is to introduce social media, iPads? I mean, this is a question for both you guys, because you guys both have young children.
I honestly think it's a kid by kid basis. Honestly, I mean, that's what you'll learn too. You have one, you might have two, you might have three. They're all fucking different, man. You know, my first one is different from my second one, different from my third. Wilder, you know, is a little more sensitive. Bodie's got more. He's more feet on the ground. Like, it's just different. You know, Wilder was good for social media, whereas my younger daughter might not be. So I think, again, I think you're working off of instinct and intuition. Just get in tune with your kid and understand that, you know, it's a crazy social media world out there. And if you as a dad think, okay, yeah, you can handle it. You know, if you want to be a part of this thing, know that I'm going to monitor you. And if you fuck up with it, you're done. And, you know, if something is happening that I'm not agreeing with, it's going to go away, you know. But again, you can't stop progress. You can't cut them off from the world completely. My kid got social media. He's 13. I think he got social media at 11, 10 or 11. He wanted it. And I said, no, you can't have it. Da, 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 da. He wrote me a 5-paragraph essay, which he does not do. he's not an academic. He wrote me an introductory statement, 3 paragraphs, and a conclusion on as to why he should have Instagram and how he's going to be responsible for it. Unsolicited. I didn't ask him to do it.
That's impressive.
I read it. Dude, I read it. I'm like, hey, you just earned it. Like, I really love that you took the initiative to do this, and boom, you can have it. He has not abused it one time. He's not obsessed with it in any way. You know, he's been good.
That's the part that I think's the scariest, is the obsession with it and the heads down, disconnected from everybody at a dinner table, disconnected from everybody in the car. The best time, that's why I would say to you, Jax, when you think of where your son will be in 10 years, if I go back and I think of my daughters when they were 9, 10, 11 years old, this wasn't even on the radar. So right. How things change every 10 years. I mean, to think of where we will be with all this stuff, who knows what's going to be presented to your son.
I'm scared. And
I'm not going to lie to you. But, but I think it's the obsession. I think that's a great word. And I think, Oliver, that you recognize that Wilder's not obsessed with it, is if it can be left in its proper place and looked at in its proper perspective, then I think it works. But you know, for my older daughters,
it's balance. I literally had this conversation with my two boys last night because they're into Minecraft right now and they're on their fucking computers all the time and they're buried in it. And I'm like, okay, this is the world we live in, but there's balance. Tomorrow you're off of it and get outside, go skateboard, dude, go get on your motorcycles, go fucking into the woods. I have a trailer, a 33-foot trailer. I camp. We get out there. We get out in nature. Balance. That's for me. That's what it is.
Do you set aside times for playing video games? You say, hey, here's a slot. They have time slots.
Yeah,
or
I got
to let them do whatever.
No, I have a little, you know, sort of system that I use that it's like when they're in school, it's all remote now. So there's nothing, you can't do shit while you're in school. Once you finish, you got to go outside. And then once your homework is done, whenever the hell it is that you want to do that, then you can get onto your computer and start playing a little bit, you know?
I got a little bit of a nightmare story, if I can tell you guys really quick. So my aunt was telling me she's having some issues with her niece because her niece is younger and she's in junior high. And these kids now, this is what she told me. These kids at school, these girls are wearing different color bracelets. And depending on the color these girls wear, that's what they do sexually.
Oh God.
And she's like, this is in Texas. And this is why I'm scared.
I think that parents, I'm just generalizing, are too afraid to have these conversations with their kids at an early age, right?
Yeah.
I disagree with that. I say talk about it now. My daughter's 7. When she starts, if this shit starts to happen, I'll say, hey, look, here's what's happening. These kids are wearing bracelets right now. Every color represents something sexually. Be aware of this, okay? And don't be a part of this. This is not what makes you cool. Make them aware of it. You know, I just had this situation with my son because on Snapchat right now, you know, there are drug dealers out there who are pushing weed that is laced with fentanyl. My kid's 13 years old. And I said to him, I said, hey, you know, this is the reality out there. If you have any interest in weed or anything like that, you come to me and you talk about it.
Because that's how my mom did it.
This is the deal, man. You know, I'm cool, all right? You can talk to me about this stuff.
Right, right.
Don't go think that you need to go sneak and do that shit. I have better weed than they have, so come to me.
That's how my mom was with me, and I was trying to figure out how, when it comes to punishment, I was trying to figure out, we had an open door policy at my house. And my mom, smoking cigarettes was the big thing when I was a kid, when kids were doing it. And my mom said, listen, you want to smoke cigarettes? I'll buy them for me. You smoke them right in front of me and you can smoke a cigarette. I have no problem. There'll be no punishment. So if anything that came in, if I brought it to the table, there was no punishment. There was no talk. If you were honest and open, they would give their opinion. And that's kind of like, I kind of want to raise my kids like that.
I was going to say, how can that not work in 2021 or any year? That brilliant. I mean, that's what you go with. That's what you lean on.
I also have, like I said, I grew up in an extremely conservative town. And I also had friends with dads who were just like, if you even mess up once, I'm going to backhand your ass. Like, so we didn't, you know what I'm saying? So we were very strict. Parents were strict in the 80s, man. They didn't do that. There was no open door policy. It's like, if you do this, you're going to a home. You know what I'm saying?
There was military academy.
Yeah. That's how some of my friends had it. They were petrified to go to their parents if they screwed up. And then they run away and they do other stuff and the world just keeps going like that. So there can't be any upside to that.
Nah, but it's funny because we're living in a different world now. And I think there's a balance because I do think that we have moved into too much of a coddle culture as well.
Me too.
We do not discipline our kids. There are no boundaries. They crave that shit. They want structure. Unconsciously, they want structure. They don't know it, but they need it. So I think that's important. But at the same time, communication now needs to be more at the forefront. So I think there needs to be that balance of discipline, of setting boundaries and rules, but also opening the door for communication and saying, hey, if you come tell me the truth, I'm not going to get upset with you because you're just being upfront. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm down with that. I'm cool with that. You know, I'm not going to punish you if you come to me and say, hey, Dad, I'm 14. He's 14. I smoked a joint and I feel a little panicky. I'm like, okay, dude, I'll come help you, you know, rather than hide that shit. And then who knows what can happen.
And hold them accountable. Give them some responsibility. Say, hey, listen, that's kind of what my dad did too. Hey, I'm going to leave this one up to you. You make the right decision. That way you kind of feel like, okay, I'm starting to feel like an adult a little bit. And I'm kind of like, my parents are giving me a choice.
Well, I mean, when you think of the example you said from Texas, unless those girls are aliens or their parents are just the worst parents, most checked out people in the history of time, those girls somewhere down deep know that them putting on those bracelets is wrong. They have to know how that makes them look. And if they don't, then they haven't been taught one thing by anybody in authority or their parents or their mom or their dad. I mean, if that happened with my daughters, and I can honestly sit here and say, I just know it wouldn't. That gets down to the individual household and how you're raising your kids. And I guarantee you, if you do it right, your kids aren't wearing those bracelets. And they'll go home and talk about the kids that's wearing the bracelets and know that, by the way, half that's bullshit anyway, because they're not doing half the stuff that they say they're doing. It's just to look cool. And if they are, then they are in another category. I don't know how old these kids are.
Not saying she was doing it. My cousin was. This is
No. Exactly yeah, no, said. I got
she
it.
She came
I
home
got
to her mom.
Yeah.
And she was like, Mom, you're not going to believe this. These girls are wearing these bracelets.
Well, good. Well, there you go. Yeah. That should be the reaction. Like, you're not going to believe what's going on at school.
I mean, the point of all that was, it scares the shit out of me, the knowing that, like, you know, one of these days I'm going to have to let my kid go to school and I can't be there and I can't protect him. You know, that part scares me, but that's just life. Kids got to grow up.
You'll get it all. Yeah. Everything you put in, you're going to get out. I guarantee you that's the way it works. Oliver's a great dad. He does it in a different way than I did it. But if you put the time in and you have an open, communicative, real relationship with your kids, you will get back what you put in and they will have the right kind of moral compass to navigate through situations when you're not there. That's how I was as a kid. That's how you were. That's how Oliver was. You find your way through, and it's how you learned to sidestep a lot of these crazy pitfalls that are out there.
If you're enjoying this episode of Dad Issues, don't keep it to yourself, all right? Share the love. Tell a friend about Dad Issues. Go subscribe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay tuned. You don't want to miss the rest of our conversation with Jax Taylor coming up right after this short break.
Do you think you're going to take a lot of what your dad gave you or how he raised you and implement that into how you raise your kids?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, my parents were a little ahead of their times when it came. My mom kind of had to help my dad a little bit more, but my mom was a little bit more, you know, a little bit more free-spirited, you know, a little more. And she kind of was just like, you know, when my dad would lay down the law, she'd be like, okay, hold on, let me ease him up a little bit. But my mom, I'm going to raise my kid just how my parents did it. I think they did it the right way. We had a great childhood. We loved being home. We loved our mom and dad. My parents were still together to the very end. You know, we went camping on the weekends. We got, you know, we had a really just normal childhood. So there was no reason to rebel and smoke cigarettes and go get drunk when you're not supposed to. And there was no reason for that because like I wasn't involved in too many sports and I didn't want to screw any of that up. I you know, I got in trouble one time and that my dad took away hockey, which is my life. And I've never screwed up again after that, as far as my school grades went. And so.
Another thing that Oliver talks about, which is following through. I mean, you got to follow through on whatever you say is going to be the repercussions of the punishment. You have to deliver it. And if you don't, then anything you say carries absolutely no weight.
That's the problem I have because I'm the stern guy. My beautiful wife, on the other hand, is kind of like, oh, it's okay. You know, it's this, that. Like,
Joe can relate to that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in the same situation.
well, I'll put my foot. I mean, I don't even have a child right now. And, you know, you'll have conversations with your wife and be like, no, and she'll ask my opinion on something. And I say, no, we're not. I appreciate if we don't do that. And then, you know, not all the time, but it'll go behind my back and do this. Like, what's the point of even asking me if you're just going to do it anyway?
Well,
like,
honestly, right. Honestly, you talk about your kids and you worry about sort of, you know, how they're going to grow up in this day and age. And you'll figure that out. And you got a ways, you know, you got a ways to go and you're going to rely on your instincts. But on the flip side of this, it's also about you and your wife and making sure that relationship is sound. And that even if you do disagree on how to do things, you find common ground. You know what I mean? Because that can fuck up a relationship as well, where it's like, no, this is the way I want to parent. And she's like, well, this isn't the way that I do it.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta find a balance for sure with that. That's big, you know.
Did you ended up with Brittany, but that was basically a result of the show, correct?
Gosh, funny story. I was single and I went with Sheena, who's on the show, and it was her birthday in Vegas. So we went to Vegas. I went a day early because I wanted to go see a band play. And we were in this bar, I think it was the Golden Nugget. We're in the Golden Nugget. And Brittany, I was on a date. This is a funny story. I love telling a story. So I was actually on a date with another girl. I planned it. That's why I went early. I went early because I went on a date with another girl. So I was at the bar. My friends were all at the bar. I was at the table. Brittany walks by in this Southern Kentucky accent. And I would just turn my head so obviously. I'm like, who is that? And I see her talking to my friends. So I waited till the girl that I was on a date with went to the bathroom, went and got her number. And I go, I really can't hang out and talk, but can I get your number? I'm actually on a date. I know this is whatever. This is terrible. She ended up giving me her number. She didn't watch the show. She didn't know who I was. Her mother did. And then I called her the next night in Vegas and we haven't left each other since.
Wow.
Yeah. She moved in like 3 weeks later.
Vegas has a way, man. Vegas has a way. That's where my wife and I sort of fell in love. We were friends for about a year and a half because I had a girlfriend and then she had a boyfriend and it just didn't kind of work out, you know, but we remained friendly or, you know, a lot of sexual tension friends. And then in Vegas, it all sort of came together at Caesar's Palace on Super Bowl weekend. And we spent the weekend there with a bunch of friends. And that was that. Vegas was the catalyst.
It is. She was actually coming in Vegas for two nights. She was just coming in because she was going through a breakup of her own. So it kind of just worked out. It worked out.
So that relationship, you feel how has that nest been put together? You feel good? You both feel ready? I mean, this is imminent. Like we're talking about within 2 weeks, right? You're going to have this baby.
We thought it was last night, to be honest. She was having some serious, I mean, she's at the Braxton point now Hicks. Where she pretty much hates me right now. So she can barely move. She's waddling through the house. You know, she's constantly in pain. Towards the end, it's just everything. It's all squished in her, you know, her lungs and everything are all up here and she's hot and cold.
It's gnarly. This is the worst time is at the end. You know, it's just, it's like, that's when it gets bad.
Can you and I, Oliver, cannot describe that feeling of what it's like when that baby is born. I don't. You and I have never talked about it, but I could not stop. I could not stop crying.
Yeah.
Talk to my dad, who was doing games for me in place of me, and it is. I started talking to him, and I just you can't hold it in. I couldn't hold it in, and it's just the most beautiful moment in something
you got me tearing
that you
up
will
already.
Never ever forget, and it's just. Like in that second, your entire existence has changed.
It's not about us anymore.
It's not about you anymore.
We didn't find out with our kids the gender. So, you know, when Wilder came out and it was a boy, you know, of course, leading up to it, I don't care. I'll take whatever. I just want healthy, happy, which of course is the truth. But I did care. I wanted a boy first. I just did.
Yeah.
I wanted the boy first. I wanted to get him out of the way, and then I'll have 17 girls. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just wanted to get that boy out. So when he came out, I mean, I still have the video. My voice goes like 8 octaves high. I'm like, it's a boy. Oh, my God. I'm freaking out. But I will say this. This idea of love at first sight, it can happen, okay? But for you and just for whoever's listening, don't feel obligated to feel that, because I didn't. It's fucking gnarly. The whole experience for me personally was insane. The beauty of life is insane, But that love at first sight, it took me a second because I was just like, holy shit, this is unbelievable. And it takes a minute to sort of, for me to just like really sink into what was going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know,
my friends, like a couple people on the show have given birth already. We had Stassi already gave birth to her kid, and Lala had her baby, and we're next. And then Sheena's after us. So I, everybody's like, when he grabs your finger for the first time, and you know, it's just, you're responsible for this human being now. And it's just, I can't wait. Like I said, I'm excited. I can't wait till he gets here. Mm-hmm. We're over-prepared. I mean, the car's been packed for 2 weeks. The stroller, everything's ready. I don't know how you did it not knowing the sex. I couldn't do that. I mean, how do you get your baby room ready and your clothes and all that?
Neutral. You know, it's like you go neutral. Yeah, you go neutral. We were just like, it's the last great sort of secret, you know, in this world.
No, I got
everything
you.
Else is exposed now. We know everything now.
No, tons of and respect for that. I just been
you
doing
know. Oh yeah.
Especially every time I turn on a news channel, somebody's like having some catastrophic event at a gender reveal party. So I think it's probably at least safer to wait until the baby is born with these crazy. We're gonna outdo our friends with a gender reveal party. We're gonna, you know, have somebody
like
explode.
Spark wildfires, and,
right? Yeah.
You know, maim
oh my
and
God!
Scar people.
I know.
the whole forest went up and it's blue on top. We're having a boy.
I can't get over is the parties and the gift and like okay, there's the bridal shower or the baby shower. There's like multi. I can't remember brain fart.
Yeah.
But then I have to get a push present, which I've never heard of that in my life. A present for giving birth. Okay, and then there's a sip and see. I've never heard of a sip and see. So sip and see is when the baby's born, you have people over to your house to see the baby. That's another party.
Yeah.
I'm like,
what's
Jesus.
It called?
A sip and see. So it's when your friends and family come over to see
have
the
like
baby.
Have like a glass of wine or whatever?
Yeah.
Like champagne? Or?
It's just another reason to drink and for other people to get out of their houses and away from their own kids.
I don't want
to come
my
see
house.
Your kid.
I don't like people.
Yeah.
You don't want them touching, especially now. Like the last thing, some fragile little baby, and you don't know what somebody's bringing into your door. Like, I don't touch my kid. Let him build up his immune system before you're all
over. Well, I was obviously before the COVID thing hit, but that was just another event. And getting back to the reveal, we did the dye in the pool.
Yeah.
That was the safest way. You know, you turn around, you put the dye in the filter in the pool.
Yeah, that is safe. But does that prove that there's actually a dye out there that if you pee in somebody's pool, it turns a different color?
Well,
should have had everybody pee in
a
pool.
That's a great gender reveal party where everyone goes in the pool and pees at the same time.
Yes.
And
oh my God, it's
blue.
Pink.
Right.
What's her name going to be? And clean my pool. So let me ask you, as you look back on this chapter of your life, 8 years on this show, I don't know where the name Jax came from. I know that's not your real name. Were you Jax before the show?
I turned Jax. My father's rolling over in his grave. I turned Jax in 2001.
Okay.
Okay. So the story behind that is I got into the modeling game, you know, when I was in, after I came, I didn't want to go to college. I went to college for 2 years. I just didn't want to do it anymore. And I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. My dad's like, you don't go to school. You're not living here. So I went in the military for a little while, got out of the military, came home and I said, okay, now what? So, I think I was shopping in the grocery store. And somebody came up to my mom, would you be interested in your son modeling? And I'm like, no, I'm not into that. Again, this was a long time ago. And then they were like, hey, we'll give him, you know, here's a job for Kmart. We'll give him $1,000. And at 21, I was like, I don't even have a job. $1,000 to take my picture for Kmart? I'm in. Sign me up. So things started going really well. And then they're like, well, you should go to Chicago. You're doing really well here in Michigan, a small market. Go to Chicago and start hitting the bigger markets. So I got to a really big modeling agency. Ford Models picked me up. And they said, hey, listen, we have a lot of Jasons, and your last name is Couchy. It doesn't really flow together. Can we switch up your name? What's your mom's maiden name? Taylor. Okay, we'll take that. And then I don't know how Jax came about. I think we just took the S out of Jason and put an X in there. That's how you got it. So that's kind of how it went. I mean, it's kind of the Hollywood way. I mean, like Brad Pitt, Johnny Depp, those aren't their names. Yes.
No, but so for sure. Just, but I was just going to say, if that 8-year chapter is something you'd kind of like to leave behind, do you leave the Jacks with it, or you've built up too much in the name Jacks to kind of
Well, I think I've built up too much in the name Jacks Taylor. My son is going to have my legal last name, Cauchy. But yeah, my family doesn't call me Jax. They refuse to call. My sister won't call me that. They're the only ones
they're
that
like,
don't call
me. Fuck you, dude. Yeah, they're like, crazy. They're like,
changing your name? You got to remember, my Midwest family is like, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. My dad, and that, imagine again, my conservative father just like, you know, shaking his head. He's like, what, Jason's not good enough for you? My name's not good enough? I'm right. Like, Dad, it's a business. It's easy when the producers and they when you're going on auditions, it's easy for them to remember Jax Taylor. It sounds like an actor. It's just better. He didn't understand that.
Are you going to work your dad's name into your kid's name?
No, that's not going to be
not,
his name.
It's not being handed down.
No, but his last name, yeah, we're going to keep that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All right. Good. Yeah. I can't believe we've gone an hour.
I could do this all day. I love it.
It's fun, man. I know. It's a blast. It's fun. It's been really fun talking to you. I got to get into this podcast world.
I love it.
You're the only human walking the planet that doesn't have one.
Everyone's on it now. I know.
That's the reason, because I feel like everybody has one, you know? And I just like, you know, what I'm trying to figure out what I would do. I really, you know, I went on Randall and Lala's podcast and they kind of had the dads on there. I kind of like the new dad kind of aspect of it.
Yeah,
like going,
it's great.
Talking about new dad stuff that, because like, again, I don't understand millennials. I don't understand their verbiage. I need help, you know? So I think dads coming together dads with different kids coming together and talking about, well, my kid's 10, he's going through this. Well, my kid's 5, he's going through this. Well, I have a newborn. I'd like to like bounce stuff off people and maybe get some ideas and something like
that's
that.
Great. I like
that.
I
don't know.
I think that's cool. I think you have a really great opportunity, honestly, for the next half of your life, man, because you were set up as one thing. You know, you helped perpetuate it because you had a paycheck, right? You had to sort of feed into that. Yeah. And now just from a human standpoint in your personal life, but also moving forward in this entertainment business, I think you have a real opportunity to sort of show who you really are. And I think that's pretty exciting for the next chapter of your life. And just my two cents is whether it's a podcast, whether it's a new show, that should be the focus. You know what I mean? It's like, this is who I really am. This is what I really care about. These are my values. You know, this is my heart. What you saw was my bravado, you know? And now I want you to know who I am.
The Jax Taylor that existed on the show, it wouldn't work in this day and age. I kind of got out at the right time. You know, if this would have happened in like season one, I would be screwed because my character doesn't work anymore in today's reality world. It's too hard. You're going to offend somebody. I actually got in and got out at the right time. And I, like you said, I'm excited to go further and like to be who I really am, you know, a fun, outgoing guy that's exploring fatherhood and trying to figure out what my next step is. I turned 40, so I call it the back nine of my life now, trying to figure out the back nine of my life and trying to figure out, okay, now I'm going to do what I want to do because I did build a platform and I have something there. And, you know, like I said, I would like to go to bed without stressing out.
Do you have any regrets? You know what I mean? Do you have any regrets?
Of course. Lots of them.
You do. Because look, I was never a perfect dude, but it made me who I am. It made my relationship. It made me a better man, made me a better husband. I had to reflect. I had to go inside. I had to actually go seek help. I had to go do shit to make myself who I am today. And I love who I am today. But without all of those bad decisions, without all of the quote unquote regrets, I wouldn't be me. You know what I mean?
You know, it all started. When I came to Hollywood, you know, that song Blinded by the Light, I came to Hollywood at a young age and, you know, I was a small fish in a big pond and I'm trying to make a name for myself, constantly telling people stories, things that weren't true, trying to be accepted with my peers, trying to live out of my means. That I wish I would have took back because I was just trying to be accepted. I couldn't get involved in a conversation if I didn't say I was doing this or if I wasn't doing this or if I wasn't, you know, stretching the truth here. I wish I could take a lot of that back because there was a lot of bullshit I said, and just to get to the top.
Not to get too psychological here, but why do you think though that you that you needed to get to the top? What is it apart? What's your personality, or what is it about you? Like, I need to fucking do everything I can to make it. Where does that come from? Who are you trying to prove that to? You know what I mean?
Prove to everybody else that went to school and's got the 9 to 5 and has the picket fence and everybody else that I could do this too, and I can do it better without going to college. And I just constantly
and
felt
to
like
your
I
dad,
to,
right? I mean, I, you had to prove it to your dad.
Yeah,
did
I had
you
to
ever
prove
feel
to my
that?
Dad.
Did you feel like you had to prove? Did you feel that? Like, did you that you had to prove to your dad that you can?
A little bit, and it wasn't his fault by any means. But I constantly felt like, you know, I'm sending him my pay stubs. I used to send my dad my pay stubs. You know, just to prove that I'm making money. I promise you. Like, I just felt like I was constantly. But then again, because I was telling so much bullshit, there were so many lies I was caught in that I was having to live up to those lies. It was just tough. It was tough. Mm-hmm. You know, the reality show didn't make it easier. I'm very fortunate to be on that show. I was very successful on it, and I made a great living. But, man, it took a toll on my mental health. It took a toll on my mental health. I can't tell you. I cannot tell you. And I'm getting emotional right now how happy I am not to be part of that show anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, it's a weight that's lifted off me that I don't have to be that person. And there's no pressure to, like, put on a good show so I get a paycheck on Friday. There's no pressure.
Do you feel like you've crawled out of that hole, or you're still crawling out? You're still crawling?
I think I crawled out of it. I can see the hole, but I tell you what, I'm just a happier human. I couldn't go back into that type of world that I dug myself, by the way. I'm not blaming the show. I dug it myself, but I dug it so deep that I just couldn't get out at times. And, you know, I painted a picture of myself that wasn't 100% true, and it just, I paid for it.
Yeah. Well, dude, it sounds like you're on the right path. You got your head on straight.
I hate
to
be a Debbie Downer, but
what's fucking great shit. You know why? Because people can listen to this, hopefully, get a different perspective on who you are, who you want to be. You know, you have real insight as to who you were as well. And now you're ready to sort of turn the page and create something new. And you've got a baby on the way, and that changes the shit out of you. Sounds like you've grown up, you've matured, you're ready to start the new chapter. So, I mean,
when you put it that way, it sounds better. I hate to sound like such a negative person.
No, but think of it as more of an awakening, I guess. I had to go through this shit to actually discover who I really am and my soul, you know, and who I want to be moving forward. I mean,
grinding and sleeping on people's couches and doing that, I wouldn't change that. That taught me how it used to be, how it could be. It taught me, you know, humbleness. It taught me how, you know, I worked my ass off. It didn't just hand to me. I was in Hollywood for 10 years before waiting tables, busing tables and modeling and doing this, trying to just scrape money together just to get by this expensive town. And then, you know, and then I got the show. But yeah, I would never change any of that grind that I had to go through. I look back now and be like, God, I did some things for jobs. Like, I would go drive to San Diego to make $300 or, you know, it just stuff I did made no sense, but I did it just to get by. And I wouldn't change any of that. That taught me so much.
It took a lady with little tiny poodle dogs and a husband that looks like a fake Robert Plant to change your entire life.
Yeah.
There it is.
Well, I appreciate her for giving us the opportunity, but we kept the show going.
Yeah, I would say.
I'll make that very clear.
Yes. No, I think it is very clear. You said that the song Blinded by the Light, I still have never known the second line.
Wrapped up like a douche.
No. I looked it up.
No?
Blinded by the Light, revved up like a deuce, another deuce. Runner in the night. But for everybody's lifetime, it's always been wrapped up like a douche.
That's what I thought it was.
It's wrapped up like a douche, another joker in the night.
That was me in my 20s in Hollywood. 100%. That's
perfect.
I should be on the CD record cover. wrapped up like a douche.
We will superimpose your face in Manfred Mann's Earth Band. Just looking at the cover of that album, I'm not certain you're going to fit in. With their look.
Right, it's revved up like a deuce.
Deuce, right? Like ace, deuce, yeah.
Yeah.
Revved up like a deuce, another runner in the night.
Right, so it's like the guy's taking a dump, like he's got to take a huge dump, so he's revved up like a deuce, but it turns into diarrhea.
Yes.
Another runner in the night. That's
verse one, madman, drummers, bummers, Indians in the summer with a teenage diplomat. I mean, what?
Let's do, we'll call ours the Weird Al Yankovic.
Yes.
The Weird Al Yankovic version.
Yes. Yeah, another one, Rides the Bus by, right? I mean, I can, some of those titles were just genius.
Yeah. I know. Weird
another
Al.
Another one, Rides the Bus.
All right, well, Jax, we ask one last question.
Sure.
Pertaining to sort of, you know, your dad, what you have taken from him and you know, from a DNA standpoint, and it's sort of a two-parter. You know, what is that? What is the one thing that you have inherited that is just a part of you from your father that you
good looks
are proud of and want to exemplify? Right, moving forward, it could be that. And then, what is the what is the? But then, on the flip side, what is that thing that is in your DNA that you wish just wasn't there? You know, like fuck, man, I have this is my dad, and I love him, but damn it.
Patience. Never got him. Patience, short fuse. I got that from my dad. I can't change that for the life of me. I wish I could. I wish things didn't bother me as much as they do. I let little things set me off, and I need to learn. I try so hard to not let things bother me. I try, like, especially little things. You know, I could have a great day, and then if I see something somewhere, it could just set me off. And it's just, I wish I could just learn to be like, that's where the weed comes in. I wish I could just learn just to be like, it's not that big of a deal. Life will go on. You know, don't let it ruin your day. And I let things ruin my day. I wish I could change that. You know, what I got from my father besides his devilish good looks.
his humility.
Humility. You know, my dad is a caring, thoughtful, he's a huge giver, and he's a hard worker. And I got all that. I'm an extremely hard worker. Like I said, I grind. I always have my hand in like 25 different pots because I always like things going and what can we do and where can we make work now? He was like that. He's a good family man, and I know I'll be that. A good
father. What do you hope that your kid takes from you, and what do you hope that he does not take from you?
A lot that he'd hope he doesn't take from me. But what I hope he takes from me is I just want to teach him like just humbleness, being a good person. A good person, doing the right thing, making good choices. That's it.
Well, dude, thank you, man.
Well,
I appreciate
just like to say, first of all, so before you guys sign off, I don't know how many of your viewers listen to me or watch me or are fans of me. I just want to say I appreciate everybody out there. I hope they got a little bit from this. You know, Brittany and I aren't going anywhere. We will be back, but we just really appreciate the support. And I hope you got a little information, a little background about me. And you guys continue to support. And like I said, Brittany and I really appreciate it. We're excited to be parents, and we're excited for everybody to follow along on our journey.
Thanks, man. Thanks for being so open, and thanks for coming on. And it was fun. It was an hour plus. I mean, that flew by. That's a good sign. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you, Jax, guys, for having me. I appreciate it.
I want to spend an hour in your garage sometime.
Anytime.
Look through all that.
Anytime.
All right. All right.
Appreciate you, man.
All right, guys. Take care.
Ollie, you thought it was douche too. Revved up like a douche, another runner in the night. Wrapped up like a douche.
Another joker in the night.
No. And you got mad at me. This is the first time you've ever gotten mad at me on the show.
How did I get mad at you?
When you're like, oh, it's Joe rubbing it in my face they didn't pick up my show. I wasn't rubbing it in your face. Fucking dick.
A little bit.
No, I was not.
It's fine, dude. You're making a ton of money. You got stability, and you can just fucking needle me. It's all good. Don't worry about it.
That wasn't what happened.
Joe, you could never offend me, dude. I would never actually get mad. I mean, you know, I'm just putting on a show.
Okay.
Just fucking putting
it was
on
all
a
for
show,
entertainment's
man.
Sake. You're hotheadedness. You got snippy at me. It's okay. I like it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get another job. You know, if the goofy, funny thing doesn't work, maybe if people can see me as like sort of an angry asshole, that maybe they'll hire me as that.
I think you should go back in time and redo your role on Rules of Engagement as like an angry, bitter asshole.
Yeah, maybe just go to on like Third Street Promenade and just, you know, reenact the entire series.
Just with hire people to. This yeah. guy's today. The role of David Spade is going to be played by this guy who's talking
by
to
this
pigeons.
Guy.
Who's talking to pigeons? And we've got Patrick Warburton is going to be played by the hot dog vendor, and right on down the line.
Hey, if that as long as there's some money that gets put in my hat, I'll
okay.
be okay.
Yeah, well, okay.
I'll do it.
That was fun. That was long. I that was great.
That was awesome, dude. That was great. I feel for him. You know, I mean, you make choices, you make decisions. You know, you put yourself out there. You're playing a character, a caricature. You know, a heightened version of yourself. And he gets it. Like, you know, you can get hammered, and now he's got an opportunity to sort of turn it around, or at least, you know, if he wants to change his perception. You know, then but, or change the perception of him. He has the chance to do that.
That's reality TV. That's what drives me nuts when Michelle's watching Real Housewives of X, mm-hmm. Y, and Z, every city in North America, and she's into it and she's working, and I'm listening to people just screaming and yelling at each other. It's like, this is all, nobody lives like that. We're all going to go to a winery, and all of a sudden, mm-hmm. pigs are going to be let loose, and they're going to run muddy through the room,
right,
and then everybody's
right.
going to throw stuff at each other. And okay, that's so real. Yeah,
right.
Got
like,
it.
Wait a minute.
Oh, and she didn't like her.
Not, right. Like this doesn't seem like it can
don't
happen.
Put one of those shows in a time capsule so that whenever the next like 10 generations from now, they're looking back, that represents life in 2020.
Oh, well, too late there, man. That's where we are.
Okay.
That's where we are.
All right. Well, go do your estate planning and come up with something good.
Yeah. I'm going to leave you something really good. Hopefully you'll never see it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I've just jinxed myself on my life. So hopefully.
I'd like to think the universe works in a little bit more stabilizing factors than you mentioning this on daddy issues, and then you walk out of your, you know, you get hit by the garage door. The garage door comes down on top of you, and like, oh my God, we shouldn't have talked about that. But I wonder what he left me.
Well, yeah, it's going to be exciting. No, it won't. It won't be exciting. You'll never know. But I'm going to tell you. I'll tell you on the next show what it is.
Oh, okay. I'll leave you something. You can have the my right-handed golf clubs.
Great. Can't wait. All right, Joe.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you.
Yes, sir. Listen to Daddy Issues on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daddy Issues is a production of Cavalry Audio and iHeartMedia, produced by Margot Carmichael.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch.
Executive produced by Joe Bach, Oliver Hudson, Dana Brunetti, and Keegan Rosenberger.